Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, betonline.ag, or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. As some of our listeners may know, our friends at JLab Audio have been sponsors of Major League Soccer for some years now. What you may not know is they also make microphones. That's right, so if you're thinking of starting a podcast or you just want to impress your friends on Zoom calls, the JLab Talk Pro is the way to go. We got our mics recently and I've been very pleased with the sound quality. It has 4 directional patterns and all you have to do is plug it right into your USB port and you're ready to record within seconds. It also looks amazing, so check out their mics, people. You won't be disappointed.
And you're eating your soup.
Welcome back to the Soccer Soup Podcast. We got a good guest here, episode 4, Ben Olsen. Really excited to talk to him. Played against him quite a bit. You know, he was the coach for DC United, and we had some rivalry games with the New York Red Bulls for a few years, and super excited to speak to him. All right, let's bring him on.
The Soccer Soup Podcast welcomes in an icon of DC sports, Benny Olsen. Thanks for joining us. We all value your time. We're a few minutes late here because Gordo doesn't, but that's pretty standard for Mr. Alan Gordon. Welcome aboard.
The market's hot. The market's hot. He's a busy man.
Rates are low.
Excellent plug, boys.
Dude, so tell me what your title is. You are advisor and consultant to the front office. Is that accurate?
Sure.
Yeah, that works. Okay, so we've also seen
doing both.
Yeah, we've also seen how much you've been painting. So exactly, what does an advisor and a consultant to the front office do? What are you doing with your time these days?
He paints a lot. I a little bit joking. I am obviously going down that path a little bit more than I would have obviously when I was coaching and playing. But I still am engaged in the club. And as you know, I'm in a strange thing where, you know, you're with a club for 20 years and then all of a sudden you get fired, but you're still working for the club and going to games and helping out and trying to assist. And it goes to, I guess, to kind of shows you how much this club means to me, I truly love this place. And even though I'm not the head coach. I want to push this team and club and organization forward however I can help. And whether that's in the front office, whether that's on the field, and whether that's scouting, whether that's culturally in and around the city in which I've adopted and love and have a good feel for. So I think there's a few areas where I can kind of push this team forward, and nobody really knows it as well as I have. I've been here a long time. I know the past. I know the city. I know the team now. I know the players. So I'll find my way, and that's what this year is about, is me figuring out kind of what I can do to push the organization forward.
Well, I think that speaks volumes about you, Ben. I mean, how many guys, can anybody think of somebody that's been a player for so long, been a legend in the club, gets the opportunity to coach, and that happens a lot, right? There's been a lot of those, but how many of those guys do the club, after firing them, you know? And it's a tough moment, you know, for both sides, is because you guys have been together for a while, and there has to be, you know, it's inevitable, right? There's going to be that moment of split, and then they keep you around and say, hey, you're still a huge value. I mean, that's big time. I can't think of anybody.
Has anybody even been with the club 20 years as a player or Tom Brady, how long was he at New England? And that didn't even make it to 20 years, right? So, I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, what is that? Does that feel good to you?
Right? I feel, you know, it wasn't your average kind of firing, right? Yeah. Because of the things you just said, you know, I've been here so long. And, you know, if you want, I can boil it down to just the fact that it was time. Yeah. Like, it was time for them to move on, and it was time for me to move on. And, you know, I was, maybe that was even a year ago of when that change kind of should have happened. And I knew it, and they knew it. And 10 years is a long time, and there's a little burnout towards the end. And just, you know, fresh blood sometimes is what an organization needs. You do go through, you know, I'm not saying it's fun to get fired. You still go through a mourning process. You still feel like shit, you know, and you feel the ego. You're working with your ego, and man, I'm not the head coach anymore. You still go through that. But I imagine mine was a lot shorter of a struggle than, say, if I went to a club, they gave me a year and we went on a losing streak, and early in the next season, they canned me. Yeah. I can't imagine how long I would hold that, whether it's anger or, just that feeling of resentment. Betrayal. I think some coaches, when you get canned like that, I can't imagine. So I feel very fortunate that I've been able to kind of walk away from this program and have a relationship with the ownership that I do and the organization and the city.
Yeah, the city's probably a big one for me. I spent some time there at Georgetown. I absolutely love D.C. And to spend as much time as you did, I can only imagine what that feels like now in terms of looking forward. You had talked about kind of using this year to see how you move the club forward and how you can help the organization. And I follow you on your Instagram page, Ben Olson Art. And a lot of your pieces are titled Conversations. And are those conversations, you know, I dabble a little bit in the studio, nowhere near your level, but it's an isolating thing, right? Where you have these conversations with yourself and you think an awful lot. Do you find yourself thinking about DC still because you've been there for so long? Or do you find yourself kind of looking towards what's going to be next for you? You know, is it coaching? Is it art? Is it what is it? Where do you find yourself going?
Side question, real quick to that: Have you always had a passion for art, even as a player, a coach, or is that something you've kind of discovered recently?
So we both kind of are similar answers in it. I grew up exposed to the arts. My grandfather, my whole father's side, whether it was textiles, whether it was sculpture, art, inventors, advertising, I was exposed to this on my father's side growing up. And it was always been in me. I've always been a creative. The game itself always was my creative outlet. I painted, I drew, you know, I used to sit in my room and draw sneakers, you know, for years and years. Dan, you probably did the same thing. Yeah, and sure. It's just in you, and you have to get that out. And creatives understand that feeling. But sport always gave me that outlet. And then when I became a coach, when I was injured for 2 full years as a player, that itch was in there again because I wasn't getting that release through sport. So I started painting as an outlet. And then when I became a coach, I wasn't playing. And I was managing, and it was just so much turmoil. And so that was another kind of therapeutic way for me to stay balanced. And now this time is the first time over the last year where I could fully focus in on, almost fully focus in on that craft. And it's fun to do something, have a lot of energy and focus for something, whether it's golf, whether it's fishing, I don't care what it is. When you're a head coach, you can only focus on that so much because of the consumption and the managing responsibilities of the gig. Dan, to your question, Conversations was actually a piece that my grandfather made. I have in my house, and it was a similar piece to that, and he called it Conversations, and it was a series of his. One day I just said, I'm going to riff off this. I'm going to, with an ode to him, work on my technical skills as a painter, and also my palette, and work with colors, and you understand some of this language, but it's been fun. It's resonated with people. The story resonates.
Sure.
And I really like doing them. But they're tough for me because it's execution, right?
Uh-huh.
And some of the other stuff.
It's different than some of your abstract work.
Correct. Sure. And after I do those, Dan, I need to let loose, and then I'll have to go to kind of a bigger, a more automatic type painting that I have to, not be so tight on. So it's a nice little back and forth.
For spray paint a blue marlin, right?
Yeah, then I just put the gas mask on and get nuts, it would look good in your house, Gordo.
You think? Hey, dude, I'm waiting. I remember.
I got a nice wall of nothingness. That's something.
Isn't it?
I don't know about Gordo, dude. This guy's so far from cultured. But
dude, I remember back in the day, you painted Chris Albright and Leah a painting for their wedding a gift, right?
Yeah.
And that was always hanging on their wall, and I was always just like,
yeah. Yeah, you probably didn't understand anything I did.
No. Yeah. I mean,
you switched off.
Man, yeah, how'd you do that?
I would look at it and stare into the distance and then move about my business. But is it used generally or mostly for a stress reliever? Because if I try to draw anything that's not a stick figure, I get stressed out. It's very stressful for me. So is that what it is? Or is it really like tapping into that piece of you?
It's tapping into that piece of me at this point. There have been times, Gordo, during the season where I could sneak away to the studio and just throw shit on a wall because it felt good, right?
Yeah.
But it wasn't good. It wasn't thoughtful. You know, it's like anything in life.
It's hard.
It's difficult. And it's just like anything. Again, you play golf, you play it more, you find, you're doing this wrong. It's just like anything else. It's just hours and critiquing yourself and getting feedback and pushing. And that's what I really like about it. And to see yourself in another, again, I've been in this lane for so long, and to just kind of veer a little bit and give this thing focus for the short term. I don't know where it goes, but I'm enjoying it right now.
That's
and
great.
Again, as I veer towards another direction, I'm still looking. I'm still watching the MLS. I still, spent 20 years and all my life working in this game of soccer, and I know it. I understand it. And I know my strengths and weaknesses in the soccer world and the coaching world. So, I haven't been out of the game that long. And, I will say I went to the home opener last week, and there was a little bit of, a little itch in there. I was like, okay. So the ego pops up and like,
How'd your ex-girlfriend look walking around with her new boyfriend?
That's right. It's like, hey, coach, nice outfit over there. So I'm being honest. There are those feelings of maybe that will come back. And as these games go and I watch the MLS and I'm going to continue to be engaged in this, to see what that feels like and what I need to do for the next 10 years of my life, That's what this year is about. And when I do something though next, when I go all in, it'll be all in, whether it's back in the sport or whether I push somewhere else.
So if you go ahead, sorry, guys. Go ahead, bro. Okay. Hey, if you're a betting man, you got to put a large bet down. Are you betting that Ben Olsen, we don't know what's going to happen in the future. We all know that. Okay. Let's just get it out there. Are you betting that Ben Olsen's going to coach again, or is he going to find his rhythm in the front office?
It's a good question.
I know. I only give good ones.
That's a,
it's tough.
I don't know. I don't even know enough to say, look, I kind of just answered that question, Gordo.
Before bet. And now I'm telling you to bet.
On the spot.
I know that. Bet. Pick a side.
I'll coach again.
Okay.
Yeah.
Benny, you'll absolutely be in.
Maybe it's my son's team, Gordo, but I'll
that's fine. That's fine. Yeah, but maybe your son will be in the MLS.
Here's a question for you, Benny. Would you be able to coach for New York or Philly?
I am a little typecast, aren't I? I mean, it's...
Well, you've been with one for so long. I feel like, you know, you're a guy that could have DC United tattooed on your chest from some tough night out with Mike Pecky at some point. But
we talked to Pablo about, right?
I know you Right, we talked to Pablo about going to Salt Lake and making that decision.
Red Bulls would be tough. And it's not just me going there, right? They
for
would,
sure.
It's the whole thing. Fans don't want any part of me. So, and I'm not part of their culture. And, I didn't have enough success as a coach either to warrant that role, like where New York was like, oh, Ben's our guy. Like, no, Ben's probably not your guy. the fans don't like me. And we were rivals for a long time. So that one would not make sense. I am from Pennsylvania. My hope is Jimmy's there for the next 30 years. Because I absolutely adore the guy. I think he's an awesome coach and a wonderful human. I don't know. That's another tough call. But going somewhere and picking my family up and moving for the right opportunity and the right gig, sure. I'm not tied down to this city. I love this city. We're very comfortable in our surroundings and our friends and the life we have in DC. But I won't shy away from another journey. That's for sure.
I don't know why you're not on television right now. So put your pundit hat.
Yeah,
on.
What's up tell with me, that, dude?
Tell me why.
Don't they travel every weekend? Let me put some lights on.
I mean, radio might be a little better, but something where they can hear your thoughts.
I toss that around, and my agent calls me once a week to push me to be on TV and radio, and I'm holding them back for now. Again, it's all on the table. It's all on the table, and I'm trying to be patient and not rush into anything and dabble, and whether it's podcasts and I love talking. I love this kind of environment and pushing the league forward and telling old stories. I love this stuff, so. This would be a fun outlet.
That's good. And Gordo's nose thanks you for those radio jobs turned down. That's big time. I want to talk a couple things about just DC and just snapshots. What changed when Payne said that you weren't ready and he wasn't going to give you the job, and then complete about face and he hands you the job? Because he came out. It's very rare that anybody comes out and says no. Not happening. And then sure enough, there's Ben Olsen as a head coach.
Well, let me take you back. I mean, the first couple of months, it was a mess. Like, I didn't want that job, but they got rid of Kurt. And I remember when they told me, and my heart sank, and I felt like I betrayed him. And I actually reached out to Bruce, and I asked Bruce, I said, what do you think here? I asked for some advice, and he kind of walked me through it. And so I ultimately said okay to that interim. And, the interim is kind of easy, right? There's nothing to really lose. The team was pretty poor. The
emotional bump, for sure.
Yeah, it's like you get a little emotional bump, but we weren't, we didn't all of a sudden get good players. We had poor players from the first half. And then for my team, we had poor players again, and we continued to lose. But as that season went, I started to feel like, you know, I could do this job. I could pull this off. And then that's where the ego goes. And you guys probably would be in the same boat where you're like, I can do this now, you know, and you go in. I was knocking on Kevin's, I knocked on Kevin's door. I had a chat with him. I said, Kevin, I'd like to get this job. And Kevin thought about it. He's like, I just don't think you're ready. He's like, listen, you'll get this job eventually. Just kind of hang in there. And
did he suggest staying as an assistant to whoever they hire next, or at that time?
In fact, that was the plan. And I was even in that offseason involved in the coaching search. Okay. And there was a.
And you denied everybody and got the job. Well done.
Kevin, that guy.
Like, this guy's an idiot. Yeah.
You see that guy, Kevin?
I don't like his tactics.
No, I was all. I was all in on that. I mean, I was truly, you know, and I put a little bit of opinions. Obviously, it was Kevin's call and ownerships. But I remember being in some of those interviews. Caleb Porter was involved in that. You know, maybe they just ran out of candidates. Maybe they didn't have any other options. And sometimes the one right in front of you, right, is the guy that gets the job. And that was the case. And you see it all the time, right? The interim guy gets the job, and then it's, you interview these guys and you're like, you know what? He's doing a good job. He's right in front of my face. He's a club guy. The fans like him at this point, right? That'll change at some point, but they, it was, I don't know what changed. I'm not sure. They either ran out of candidates or it was just the guy in front of them.
So when you look back at the 10 years that you did coach DC, were there moments that you were like, ah, shit, I really wish that happened? Now that you're thinking back, like, are there players where you tried to get a player and that player in particular ultimately didn't come over and you're like, man, you know what? That screwed our plan. It screwed our whole year. And it really ruined the next two.
To follow up on that, Ben, you guys had a lot, like, you had a great year, down year, you know, great year. Like, what was the difference between those years? Was it players or was it, like, what was it exactly? Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of the MLS and the way it was structured. You know, we use the mechanisms really well. You know, my career started kind of, you know, one good year, bad year. Right. And it was like that for a few years. And then we kind of leveled off and we started making playoffs 2-3 and then one down year. And then we'd always rebound. And that's part of my longevity is we always rebounded after a bad year. Right. The curse is 2 years. You know, you get fired, you do 2 years you get fired. So if you can rebound, especially with, you know, I had a little clout, so they always gave me maybe a mulligan. What was the difference?
I mean, I know a lot of those years I felt like you guys were bringing in a lot of veteran, you know, MLS guys, some of those years where you were pretty successful. And I can't remember if a lot of those guys left maybe at that those times.
That was kind of our MO, right? We'd get guys that were a little bit over the hill or you know, coming off of an injury. And we used to joke that we were kind of like the UNLV running Rebels.
Stacey Allman signed up for you, huh?
We're like, oh, that, yeah, we'll take them. And we squeezed a lot out of those. We squeezed a lot out of players. The times we got caught, I think, was when we pushed that a little bit too far, right?
Yeah.
We went that road with the older veterans maybe a bit much. And then usually when you have these down years where you're last place or it just doesn't work out, it's always a perfect storm. It's never one thing. It's usually a bad signing or two. Mm-hmm. It's injuries to key players, right? And then it's this spiral, right? I've said seasons that just go like this and you're feeling good and you just keep rolling. You guys have had all of them. And then some just spiral down. And it's just like, how can I stop this spiral of losses and the mood and kind of change the trajectory of the season. And sometimes that's a tricky thing to do if you don't have the horses you know, it's just, you're too deep in it.
Who's the one player that we don't know about that you tried to get? Give me one.
Can't believe I never played for you, by the way. I had like 10 seasons, man.
Gordo doesn't count, dude.
It was always your demands. Like, you know.
Your MO is DC United, Alan.
I need this type of car. It's the Lamborghini.
You guys are sponsored by Audi, and you guys were offering me a freaking Chrysler.
Extra apartment. Sorry, what was the question?
The one player you missed that you would have loved to have.
You know, we always tried to get Diego Forlan for a few years.
He's sexy.
And we floated with him quite a bit. And, you know, a few pipe dream guys down, Verone, talk about to this day where Verone was essentially signed for DC United. And
what year?
You remember the, it's a good question. I don't know the year.
Like early, middle or end?
About middle.
Okay.
Middle, probably 2000. I don't know, maybe 13-ish.
Okay.
Around then. Yeah. Verone was, it was pretty much a done deal. And that wasn't necessarily me. That was more when my playing days. And then we got Gallardo on the back of that. Do you remember this?
Uh-huh, Marcelo.
Remember Gallardo? This was more kind of cultural of DC United, not when I was coaching, but.
Oh, he was good, huh?
Estudiantes pulled him back at the last second, and they put this big parade, please don't leave us, you know, and he couldn't leave. But that would have really changed, I think, those few years. As a coach, I don't know.
Didn't you end up getting Verone from Red Bull, our Verone as well? Like, but then he never came or something?
For a heartbeat. Yeah, that was like for a
moment. I was like, yeah. He ended up going back to Argentina, right?
Yeah, I think so. That's right. He never showed up.
Yeah.
It's all big blur.
Hey, you know, the last time I spoke with you when I played in DC my last year, that's when Rooney came in. And you were high on this guy. You guys started playing real well. Talk to me a little bit about that. And then, you know, how that ended, did you end up, you know, was it all good with Rooney, or was there some challenging moments as well?
There's always challenging moments, right? With every player, you know, he was the only superstar that I ever managed. And I imagine he was a very easy superstar to manage compared to a lot of the other ones. You know, he came to work every day, practiced very hard, highly competitive, good with the guys, a good leader. And ultimately, his biggest impact, I think, for our team and the organization was he just made big plays. The lights came on and he was just a winner. He made these plays that were, helped us get the results we wanted, but also re-energize a fan base that needed it and a new stadium. He doubled down on the brand new stadium. So that was it was great hype for the fans. And he also, and you guys all have been lucky enough to be on teams with players that come in with huge pedigrees. David comes into my where you just give a little bit more. Yeah. It's like, David's
trying to impress them.
Like Wayne's coming to practice. I'm gonna try a little bit harder. And the game's here. I'm gonna do one extra sprint for Wayne. And that, if you add that 1% to each little player of that importance of going to battle with a player like that, that adds up to wins, man.
And, well, especially when they're doing the little shit like making 60-yard tracking runs.
Totally.
Did he do that? Did he do that and make a tackle on Will Johnson? And
that was
MLS shows that every like few weeks.
I'm so glad that was.
What a play that was!
I'm so glad that was against Will Johnson. I can't even tell you. That's the best part. That's the best part of that whole.
Yeah, I watch that clip every time. I'm like, why doesn't Will just hit that first time? He like takes a touch, looks up, takes his time. I'm like, what?
I smile every time. But I think to your point, Ben, it's like, you know, I think as players, and I don't know how you guys are. You know, the fans will always give you shit, you know, and boo you, and the coaches are going to be harsh on you. And at the end of the day, after you get, you know, get some thick skin, that doesn't really matter anymore.
Yeah.
You want to do well for the fans and all that kind of stuff. But what really matters is your peers. You want that acceptance from your teammates. And if it's a guy like that, then you want him to think that you're good and a good player. And so you're going to give that kind of little bit, I think.
That player could either crush that. That player could either crush your team or make them so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. Let's talk about Champions League, Benny, because we got a couple teams in Champions League. I know you competed in it. We've all played in it. We haven't coached it. Why is it tough? Why is it tough to win? Like, is it a priority for coaches? Is it the balancing act? Is it the roster? Like, why can't we do it? Because I feel like our teams are good enough. Our players are good enough.
It's getting better, right? We're putting more teams in, you know, the later stages of the competition, and we're hitting the finals more and more on a consistent basis. So we've certainly separated ourselves now, I think, from everybody except Mexico.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, the easy answer is they're, you know, quadrupling our salary cap.
Right.
And they're buying better players that more times than not have better playmakers in big games and have shown a little bit more moxie and bravado when the championship big moments are in front of you. And does that equate to money? You know, I don't know. I don't know. I think there is a little bit of that hurdle of trying to get over that a little bit more of playing the Mexican teams, but it's a damn good league, man.
Yeah.
And they're attacking players in particular. They're killers. And yeah, when they, you know, get a look, they end up making you pay. I mean, whether it's, you know, America, Tigres, I mean, these are serious teams. Mm. And with some serious firepower. And we're getting there, but it's a little bit slow.
We ain't there yet.
No, we're not.
It's those road games that always seem to be the tough part. Playing in Mexico always seems to give MLS teams problems. I mean, when they play here, pretty evenly matched. You don't really see that big of a discrepancy. But, man, when you play over there, it's like you're getting crushed. 5-0, 4-0, 4-1. Coming back from the first legs, you know, it's kind of crazy.
Those games are impossible. We've all played them, man. We've all gotten hammered down there. Yeah. I mean, you know, the elements plus, you know, and they're just good. The fans, they feel it. They get those olays going and you're in big trouble.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's an altitude. It's always a little tough, but you know, we got enough guys. We have enough players in this league now that are experienced in every type of atmosphere and travel. We gotta start doing better there, and I think the league knows it. They made it a priority to go after that league and you know, try to hurdle them. But we got a ways to go.
You're a betting man. Do you bet that Liga MX is connected to MLS in a more significant fashion within the next 5 years?
I think when you see what's going on in Europe, and you know, the wheels are turning, man. The wheels are turning with a lot of people that have a lot of money and are looking to kind of push soccer forward. And I don't think anything's off the table right now.
Yeah.
And whether it's MLS, I don't know. I'm not in those conversations, but I do know there's a lot of
– Gordo's got a lot of money, dude. He does refis.
A lot of smart people like Gordo thinking about this stuff.
Well – you know, I don't want to derail where
Please derail.
You know, Ben, give me a quick story about, you know, Pablo had these stories about, you know, and Pablo is great because he actually cares and he learns and he studies and he thinks deeply about these things. And he's really interesting to talk to. And he really understands the X's and O's. And I was impressed. Give me a story about as you were becoming this coach and morphing into this guy. Number one, who's your guy that you're looking at as a coach and just being like, okay, I want to kind of do it that way. And then give me a story about somewhere you traveled and what you kind of learned if you have any of those, that was really impactful for your coaching career?
That's a big question, Gordo.
That's a lot to ponder. You're surprised that I grew up and you think I'm still the guy that got your owner, DC United owner, in a headlock at the bar. I'm not that guy anymore. I was 25.
I think like most coaches, there's a little bit, you're exposed to only so many coaches before you, are in charge yourself, and me even fewer, because I was just dealing with coaches that I played for. I didn't have the luxury to have some infrastructure of saying I coached under this guy and this guy. And I didn't have that time, Gordo, to like figure out who I was. And it was really, really difficult for me to, for the first 3-4 years, try to find out who I was as a coach because of that.
Survival mode?
It's total survival. Pablo talked about it, right? Like you're figuring it out.
Yeah.
In a job where you're managing up, you're managing a training staff, you're trying to have meetings. Imagine going from players to now managing an entire staff your team. And then now you're dealing with the trainers.
That's a lot.
Now you're calling your ownership and explain. It's just so overwhelming that it's very difficult not to prepare yourself as best you can to know exactly who you are as a leader, right? And that's an important thing. And I learned that a couple years too late. What's your game model? How do you want your team to look? I didn't know any of these things. So for 3 years, I'm just swimming and, trying to fight out and get my team to just grit it out and fight. And we were able to do that. But that's not sustainable, right? You do in a modern game, especially, you better know who you are. You better have your game. There's too many layers now to not be prepared better prepared than I was in the game. And a couple years into that, we had 2013, we won the Open Cup. Mm-hmm. But we also, in that year,
it was a rough year, right?
Yeah, we were last place. We broke the record for worst team in the history of the league.
Yet you won Open Cup. That's incredible.
To Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And beat them in their building, which, as you guys know, is one of the toughest places to play.
That's crazy.
I had the luxury to maybe like kind of throw the league down the stretch and save everything for the Open Cup to get to the finals. But the finals was still, a one-off in Salt Lake against Beckerman and Nicky and that squad.
Right.
It was an epic win. So in some ways, my worst year was my most successful. But after that year, I really evaluated myself. And I was like, dude, this is not – really got to evaluate myself and who I am. And
Pablo talked about a very similar thing.
Take that and you say – and what I did is I started with me and saying, okay, who am I? What am I about? What are my strengths? And I need to start surrounding myself with people that, can cover up my weaknesses as a coach. Mm-hmm. And, when people are like, what'd you learn as a coach? I was like, you find out who you are, because we don't have it all. Very rarely do we have people that have it all, whether you're dynamic, you've got character, you can manage, you've got the tactics, you got it all in modern football. So soccer, you better find out who you are and get your team together because of all the layers. And I started to find that out. And by the end, I have a really good feel of who I am and what I need my team to look like to be successful. So I don't know, Gordon, I don't know if that.
No, that's great. No, that's exactly what I was. That's your moment. That's your moment.
Listen, you know Bruce. Dan, you've been around Bruce. Bruce is a special guy, and he means a lot to me. And he would be the one coach that has been the most influential in my career. But I also look back to high school basketball coaches, and I'm amazed at some of the tactics and some of the philosophies that they had that I still go back to and use.
Interesting.
So that's a long whistle. So I was long-winded.
No, that's what we want to hear, dude. That's a great, it's a great answer, and it's honest. It's deep. I mean, those years, people, they don't realize how difficult of a situation that is. There's a lot of pressure. And like you said, there's a lot of elements that you got to try and control when you really have no idea. So it's
to manage yourself, you know, it's not a job where you, everyone's like, find balance, you know, how do you find balance as a head coach? It's like, people, you don't, you want balance in your life. Don't become a coach. Don't become a head coach of a professional organization.
Balance seems impossible. They're long days, short years, right? Yeah. They fly by.
Ben, going back to when you were a player, you had an obscene amount of ankle problems. How many surgeries did you end up having throughout your career?
Ten
surgeries throughout your 10-year career, basically, right? Or a little bit longer, 12-year. Yeah. Can you talk about a little bit about, you know, how frustrating that must have been? Because it wasn't just a one-off thing. It was you were coming back and then it happened again, or it wasn't feeling right. And just kind of what your mind, you know, what you were going through a lot during your career.
Because he actually walks on his ankles. It's not healthy.
It was difficult. The first round was extremely difficult because it was too soon to end my career, you know, and as the second surgery comes in and the third, and now you're on your fourth and you're like, really? Like 22 years old, this is it? You know, I went from being in Nottingham Forest potentially to get, you know, bought and have a career in Europe to now maybe, you know, going back and getting my degree and being a teacher, right?
It was 24 years old. It was that early.
22.
20,
yeah. You know, it was about it was about my second year. I went over to Nottingham Forest.
Yeah.
For a few months on a loan. Remember when they used to do those like kind of winter loans?
Yep.
You know, and it was great. It was like a glimpse of European football and
you crushed it over there while you were there too, didn't you?
I was doing great. And that, you know, there was potential buying, you know, they were in talks with DC United. I really wanted to stay. And then I broke my ankle and it's pretty cut though. They're like, yeah, here's a first class seat back to DC.
And how did you do it? Was it in training, a game or?
It's interesting. We were playing Blackburn. We were playing Brad Friedel at the time. And I was at the top of the box on a corner kick, the ball headed out, and I'm like watching the ball, you know, I'm going to volley this at the top of the box, one of these. And I wasn't watching the guy coming through, just like,
oh.
I hit the ball and he hit me on my follow through and I broke it. And over there, it was so blue collar that, you know, I gutted out the rest of the game.
Did you know it right away or no?
No, it was a hairline. I broke my ankle, but I could play.
It wasn't a sprain. So it just kind of was a knock. Yeah. Okay.
And then I trained for like, I got through like another game and a week of training on it, like because of the culture there. It was just like, they'd see me limp for 20 minutes and then it would warm up and I could get through it. And then the next game, I just did a ball and I pushed off and then it just snapped. And it just went, and there's film of me kind of looking. I thought someone threw a rock from the fans. That's what it felt like, because I never broke a bone in my life, and I was looking around because I thought a rock was thrown from the fans. It hit me in my ankle, and of course,
I've heard that about like an Achilles tendon snapping.
That's probably what it felt like. So then it was, you know, back, and then it was five surgeries, and it took a year and a half, and it was frustrating, but it was rewarding. I changed my game when I got back. I wasn't that quick. Couldn't move as well. So I went from being a kind of a spunky wide midfielder to an old grizzled holding slow midfielder. Talked a lot.
Ben, are you bow legged? Because I have a funny.
Is he bow legged?
So listen.
Is that a real question?
Yes. It's funny. You know what? Okay. So I didn't know that about you. And all I remember is when I injured my knee and I had surgery from Bert Mandelbaum. He kept saying, "Oh, your legs are like Ben Olsen's. Your legs are like Ben Olsen's. They're very bow-legged." And I'm just like, "Oh, really?" Like,
yeah, that's the worst compliment you can get from any doctor.
Yeah, I know. And he kept like putting his fist in between my knees. He's like, "Look, you can't touch your knees together. Look, you're very bow-legged." And I'm like, "Oh man, yeah, I'm gonna have some inner meniscus problems later on in life."
So was it just bone spurs after that? I know you had a bunch of bone spurs, or what was the deal? Why couldn't they sort it out?
So I got back, and then the second one was a bunch of bone spurs. It was essentially too many bone spurs in my ankle. And when they started taking them out, it shifted. They were in there like keeping it together and it shifted.
Yeah.
And then it would put all these stresses on my ligaments. And that was basically it. The second round of five surgeries, it was coming back after that. It was embarrassing.
How old were you when you retired?
32. You know, so
that lasted a while.
You know, I did those around 30 years old, that year of surgeries, and I came back for about a year, and it wasn't pretty, but I was proud that I got back. At least gave it another run. It wasn't pretty.
How's the body now? If we all went out there, could you play a game of pickup?
I can play pickup. I can do everything. I play a little bit. I play a lot of tennis. And big tennis guy.
Yeah, that's right.
It's high level.
Benny, we got a couple quick ones for you. With the Major League Soccer season upon us, we were talking a little bit last week just about some of the players that are in the league, some of the coaches. I'd be intrigued to hear your opinion on not best player in the league, or maybe it is best player in the league, but player, your first draft pick of any player across the league right now to start your team with?
Sal did not do good on this question. It took him about 10
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, I couldn't. Yeah.
It's tricky, right? That's the fun part of our league right now is it's actually a difficult question because there's a lot of ballers. We're some real players right now, but I'd probably start with Lodeiro.
Okay.
Lodeiro.
I like what he brings every game.
Yeah.
And he seems from the outside a guy that is his energy, his ability to win is contagious. And he seems like one of these superstars that gets it.
Mm-hmm.
And he just continues to produce. And you don't know necessarily how. You're like, you watch the film and you're like, well, we can deal with this guy. We can lock this guy down.
Like, he's so busy.
Right.
He's so busy.
And then he ends up with like 8 chances created in a goal.
It just makes like, it's just so easy to.
Yeah. Well, look at that squad since he showed up.
Yeah.
They can't stop winning and going to champion.
Valeri was a bit like that. I know he's older now. He's 35, I think. Yeah, but in his prime, he was a bit like that. He'd always get his numbers.
It must have been so fun being, playing on the field with him, from a distance. Obviously coached against him a few times and what a treat. I mean, what a treat he's been for the league. And again, different another level. Guy that is, I know he's a little quirky at times, but I tell you what, he steps on the field and it's on.
Yeah. Why am I drawing a blank from the cat that was up in Montreal? Number eight.
Piatti. Yeah. He was
Piatti was money.
He was a player.
Piatti.
He was a little different than Valeri, but similar, right? They're similar profile.
He was like more athletic, stronger.
He could do it more on the dribble.
He could go vertical on you a little bit better.
Yeah.
I used to fight with Mike McGee all the time. We used to say Piatti or Valeri.
Yeah.
And
who'd you take, bro?
Either way, you're disrespecting somebody, but I just remember this one game. Valeri was playing against us, and this is how it came up. And he was the sauciest guy I had ever, it seemed like that I had ever seen. He was just on.
Mm-hmm.
Valeri does it every game too. You don't have a wrong.
Those outside of the boot, around the corner flicks. Yeah. He had it all.
Piatti was just on fire.
I went down to Argentina for a recruiting trip as a coach. And I think it was Estudiantes. I'm not sure who he was. Vélez. I'm not sure who he was playing for at the time. But he wasn't starting. Might have been River. Was it Valeri?
Are you talking about Valeri? Yeah. I heard a lot of people were down there in Argentina scouting him at the time.
Everyone was down there. And I thought I was kind of first to the. I thought I was first. And
who's this guy? Yeah, you're 12 on the allocation list.
He was playing in a reserve game. He was out of favor with the first team, and I watched 10 minutes.
He was a bit of like a super sub a little bit at times, I remember.
He's playing like an 8.
Yeah.
And I turned to the – I said, that guy, him. I said, that guy, who is he? Him.
Bring me him.
We'll take him. We'll take him. And, agent kind of laughed at me. We made a couple phone calls, and was it Caleb who?
Yeah, Caleb. Caleb ended up getting.
Yeah, Caleb was here about 3 days ago and kind of already has the deal done.
So. Yeah,
that's the one where you were waving on the way.
That's the one. The question before. That's the one that got away.
Yeah. So I have another question because so I play with Colin Martin and he had been on a night out and I think he met up with Wayne Rooney one night and I think he asked him this question. He said, you know, who's one of the most talented players you've ever played with? And he mentioned Acosta from DC. So I just wanted to kind of pick your brain. You know, why would he say that? I mean, I thought he was an excellent player too, but kind of what was your idea on him?
Well, for that year, you talk about when I talk about a Wayne Rooney coming in and elevating another person's game, that he's the perfect example of Lucho now saying, I'm playing with Wayne Rooney, I'm on a stage now with this guy, I'm playing right behind him, I'm connecting to him, and their relationship, it happened instantly. Within a week, these two got on the same page. And you've seen it, right? Good players. And there's another good player. They understand soccer. It's not brain surgery.
Yeah.
They read each other, and they loved playing with each other.
Yep.
And it was organic. It was certainly had nothing to do with coaching. And they posed teams a lot of issues because they would just kind of float around together. And it was hard for teams to not get out of their defensive structure and shape to deal with them. So our overloads caused teams big issues, again, organically during that time. And, you know, Lucho gave more. He took care of himself better. And he just enjoyed the game, and he really expressed himself. And he didn't also feel like the year before where – he didn't have Wayne, and he felt like he had to do everything. So every time he got the ball, it was six step overs and over dribbling, and then he was getting fouled, and he was getting frustrated. So now he had kind of a partner in crime here to connect with and enjoy the game. And that was a fun year. And then the off season became a bit of a show with the PSG, and it soured a lot of things, and he was ready to move on. I'm happy he's back in the league, and because I think that it's a great league for him, and he's super exciting for fans. And,
Who's the best coach in the league right now? We have an incredible list of candidates, I feel like, which is pretty wild because I don't know if MLS could have always said that, but we were running through the list and going down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and felt like any one of them could have taken the cake.
Everyone talks about the evolution of players in this league and how has it changed, and the players, the younger, the more athletic, but not enough people talk about the evolution of coaching in this league. And every year it gets harder to get in here. It gets more global. The interview process is much more difficult to pass. And it's not just hand it to the guy that just retired and, you know, you have to earn it because there's a list of candidates that are super well-versed and have great resumes applying for each job. And that brings new tactics and new understanding. And so it has evolved. I think it's a great league to coach. I say this all the time. You know, a lot of coaches or a lot of leagues, there's a similar style, you know, not the premiership and not maybe the top two leagues, two or three, but most leagues in the world kind of, they play a similar style within their league. You know, you go to Scandinavia and you come to our league, you're going against an Argentine, then you're going against a German, then you're going against, you know, a Swiss guy, then a Scandinavian, then an American old school coach. You have to adapt every weekend to a new style. It's going to be high press one day. It's going to be, maybe a little bit more of a transition defensive model. Then it's going to be a Dutch-based model. Every weekend's going to be different. So from a preparation standpoint, it's a lot of work for coaches. And, you know, you better have a right staff that understands tactics.
So with that being said, you know, there's always been, we all understand that MLS is different for all the reasons that you just said. It's always been different. It's never as easy to come into this league and be successful on the pitch as well as being a coach. So my question to you is, and this is just kind of popping in my head now, but you look at the coaches that have been successful, you know, mainly successful in the last, you know, however often, it's Caleb Porter and it's Schmetzer over at, it's like these American guys.
Guys that know the league.
Huh?
Guys that know the league.
And Bruce, right? And Bruce and Ziggy Kurt. And all these guys. Right. And so,
and Tata, yeah, Tata.
So like besides Tata, right? That was the guy from Atlanta, right?
Yeah.
Besides Almiron.
Almiron.
Like, do you think that it's hard for foreign coaches to come in here and win?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I think there's a real shift for the first time in a while. Yeah. And it just looking at what you just said, Gordo, right? They're just looking at the facts.
Yeah.
Here are the coaches. Here are the coaches that are winning MLS Cup and doing the best consistently.
Yeah.
And they're American coaches.
Yeah.
So, right. You know, as much as I say all these coaches are coming in, it's hard and tactics are, you know, I still put my money on the American coach in this league any day of the week.
It saves money. I mean, let's be honest. Come on, dude. Give me a break. Like, well,
That and it's also there's a cultural thing that comes with an American coach as well, and sometimes it is a little bit more symbiotic in how you deal with a GM and your ownership, and sometimes that's a little bit of an easier working relationship as opposed to when someone comes in from Argentina or Scandinavia, where they have their own visions and that meshes with kind of that culture. That American culture and ideals of what has already been here. Some do it better than others. And some, like you said, Tata, and there's so many examples of guys that have come here and had success. But listen, ultimately, guys, you know, you still need players and you still need to spend, and you see in the teams that, really commit on infrastructure and game-changing players do well in this league.
Yeah.
You can do a league, you can get the supporter shield, and you can grind that. But when, the MLS Cup is here and teams are healthy, it's the big ballers that step up and make big plays. And
I could have won with Atlanta. I was coaching.
I was injured and I won with them. I'll take it.
I mean, Jose.
Almiron and Darlington just give them the ball, let them carry it like Darlington, 40 yards up the field.
Almiron and Joseph Martinez.
Yeah. Yeah.
I used to love putting that lineup up. I was like,
that hurts.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
They got the whole squad here. No suspensions on this game.
Benny's turning around. They brought everybody? Everybody?
I got a lot of respect for that guy, man. He took care of me in Argentina.
Went down to
Maxi Urruti, and he brought me in.
Tata or?
Tata.
Yeah, what a guy, right? Office. Yeah.
He told me about the game plan the next day because he knew I was going to the game. And
yeah.
What a loving guy and warm. And
what did you think? I mean, I think he sees the game like incredibly, like just the way he, even at halftime, would be like, oh, this is what they're doing. This is how we beat it. Go ahead. And we would just like still give the ball to Almiron and let him do it. But at the same time, like he saw the game so perfectly. It was crazy to me.
He seemed to be clear.
Yeah, he just watches so much, I think.
Yeah. He didn't seem to complicate it.
And no, exactly. Exactly.
Rhythm. And again, this from the outside, it was always anyways.
One of the best things I've ever seen is I played for Pano, and Pano is just, we've talked about it, complete psycho. Complete. just flip out, for 90 minutes on the sideline, right? Screaming, swearing. Tata turns to him. We're in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Tata turns to Pano, and he folds his arms and he stares at him for 10 minutes straight during the game.
With his sweater tied on his neck, just like
He just stood and stared at him like, what are you doing right now? You need to calm down.
I think you guys beat us that game too. I played. Was it the Open Cup?
Yeah.
You guys beat us in Open Cup? Yeah. I remember that game. All right, let's get into the plead the fifth though, because Ben's, we got to be respectful of
his
time.
He's got to go to bed.
Yeah. So go ahead, Gordo. Do you have the questions?
So Benny, here's the deal. Gordo's going to ask you 5 questions.
Okay.
You can plead the fifth on any one of the 5. If you answer all the 5, you can ask us whatever you want, and we have to answer honestly.
God, this is like a speed round or something.
Yeah, speed dating.
However you want to answer these. However you want to answer.
The most famous individual to buy a piece of your art. What was the piece about?
I'm trying to get them into some players' hands. You know, Ali Bedoya has a piece now. He's actually has a really nice collection.
He's got a great collection.
He's got a great collection. You know, Kyra Martino's coming down to pick one up, I think, here, and we're going to do a little piece on one of mine that I did kind of shortly after I got fired. That was one of my only therapeutic ones, like, you know, just kind of, and it has ego. I don't know if you've seen it, it has ego written all over it.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen that one.
So after, you know, a week in, I went to the studio and I couldn't paint. I was just still going through that process that a lot of people have to go through. And I was struggling on this one piece. It was terrible. It just kept just dark. It just wasn't going anywhere. So I just started writing ego on it, because really that's what I was kind of dealing with. And that's one of the things I think a lot of coaches are going to have to deal with when you leave the game, and same with the player, right? You guys will probably have dealt with that as well, where you're not the important guy anymore. And you're looking at that next stage and what's next and finding your next rhythm. And credit to you guys. You guys have all, I think, done a really good job of that. But anyways, Kyle, you know, heard that, and I told him that story and went into kind of a little bit more detail in that. And he loved these. Like, I'm coming down,
dude. That's wild, dude.
He's like, I'll take it.
That's a good story.
That's how it happens, huh? That must be pretty.
I mean, he said he'll take it. I haven't given him the price yet.
That's a very good negotiating tactic, Ben. He already sold it.
That's great. That's a good answer. All right, rank former teammates: Wolf, Armas, Petke,
Ryan Nelson.
Yep.
As coaches.
Oh.
Okay, well, he's changing.
That's a whole,
as there's coaches.
Wolf who?
Josh.
Wolf, yeah. Josh Wolf, Armas, Petke, yeah. And Ryan Nelson.
Well, shit.
Where's Nelson coaching?
Nelly's in D.C. And he's
an agent now, right?
Kind of an entrepreneur, yeah. He does a little of that, but Nelly was... You know, Nelly over Pecky, no offense, Pecky. I mean, you got different, you know, Chris, all of them are, I'll say this, all of them are winners. Every one of them is winners. I can't rank those guys.
Okay, so you played the fifth.
Played the fifth, right?
How do you rank a forward and a center back?
What do you mean? They're coaches. There's only one position. They're a coach.
As a coach?
Yeah, as a coach. Rank as coaches.
Even harder.
None of them really have that long of a. You know, Pecky was a winner. Pecky won a lot of games with that team, and he did it. Wow. He did a really good job. Chris, I love. You know, I'm rooting for him in Toronto.
You're not ranking.
Nelly, whatever. Wolf. I'm going to say Wolf's my number one guy. You know why? Because he's under my tree. Let me tell you about my.
You should paint that.
If you have time, if I could indulge you.
You should paint Bruce's tree. That would be a good tree.
Austin staff that you know, they should be paying me a little bit of money for.
There we go.
Davey Arnold, I put both those guys into retirement and made them coach under me. Nolan Sheldon, who, you know, I basically made his career, I sent him over to Austin. That's 3, who was my assistant coach last year. And then Preston Burpo went there, who also
I was there too.
So the entire staff is basically my staff and my tree.
Wow.
But do you think there's anything on the website?
Yo, who's your agent, Benny? You might need to re-sign somebody there.
Nothing from Matthew McConaughey saying a thank you note.
I sent him a message on Instagram about coming on the pod. He hasn't responded yet.
Hey, by the way, the green lights, that book is fire.
I need to read that. I've heard good things.
It was great. A lot of fun, that book. I agree.
All right, so
I didn't answer that one either. Keep going.
You didn't. All right. Coach you hated the most, absolutely loved shaking his hand after you picked up 3 points. Gotta be somebody.
That's a good question.
Maybe not even someone you hated, but just someone you like to beat.
It didn't happen much, but I beat Greg once or twice, and that certainly felt good.
There you go.
But he shook my hand quite a few more times where they won, so he won't mind me saying that. Greg once beat us. I'm going to tell this story. Greg once beat us, and I love Greg. I think he's super sharp. And
this is Vanny or Berhalter?
Oh, I'm sorry, Berhalter.
Berhalter. Okay.
And after he beat us, he came into my locker room. You know, I'm always good with coaches. What's up? And he came in. He's like, hey, come here. What'd you think about what we did here? And he starts talking about what he did to win the game.
What a back.
But that's Greg, right? He couldn't like kind of turn it off. He was just like still talking. He wasn't like trying to rub it in. His brain worked that way, and he was talking. He's just so. He's a wonderful coach, and I love Greg. I heard a
story about Greg as well. When this was after in 2015 with Red Bull, we lost in the conference finals to Columbus, and I think it was the next year at the draft, and they're at, you know, the coaches are all at the draft, and Jesse runs into Berhalter in the bathroom, and Berhalter just kind of looks at him and goes, you know, you guys lost because you didn't adapt. You didn't want to change your game style. And Jesse's just kind of looking at him. And he's like, look, we adapted to you guys. Look, we were playing off of Kai Kamara's head. We, you know, normally we like to play, but, and Jesse's just kind of like, this guy.
Greg's great. I mean, he's insatiable, man. And he's a learner, and he's just growth mindset. He's a special guy. I like him. I think Jesse's a heck of a coach. I mean, all these guys, Jesse's pathway, what he's doing is remarkable. I got a lot of respect for him. Bob got a lot of respect for him, you know, in what he's doing. So we got a lot of great American coaches. It's really healthy.
Better
than ever, for sure.
All right, we'll let you off easy here. Best Bruce Arena story with your best Bruce Arena impersonation. And I know you got a good one. You're one of the originals. I mean, your whole era has got a good
look, Gordo. I'm not gonna answer this fucking question, Gordo. He's the best.
The look. You got the look right too.
Yeah, we gotta get the video.
Just send it long for Gordo. Just send it up top for Gordo. There's so many. He's a gem, man. He's a gem. He's such an important guy for this country and like soccer and me and you guys. Certain stories. You know, I lived with him for a while. When I first was a pro, it was like family. They always had a revolving door of DC United people staying there, and you know, I stayed with my first year. They're like, just stay with us. And they had a basement. I stayed with Kenny had a basement down there. So Kenny was like my little brother for, you know, a year. And I went to a soccer game. So I was real family with them for a while. And it made the transition great. And
that's great.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll come back with that one.
No, it's great. I mean, you're the first one that has gone through that and not answered one question. So, you know, I don't know what to do with it. It was sure.
That's my political side, you see? You see the political side? It's 10
years. I do.
That's 10 years of press conferences.
That's coaching, yeah, exactly.
Bruno, you probably remember this. 10
years of press conferences.
We're out. It's, I think it was 2014 or 15. And we're playing New York. And he's like, Dan, what are you doing back there on the back post? And I was like, well, Bruce, the ball's about to get, you know, I'm reading the play. It's about to get crossed and whipped in. And he's like, well, what are you, what are you marking? And I was like, you know, I'm reading the game here. I'm marking the space.
Was that against us in 2015?
Yeah. I was like, I'm just trying to cover this space because, you know, it's a dangerous spot for this ball. We've talked about how much, I don't know, Zizzo's probably whipping crosses in. And he's like, you know, I can't recall. Who's leading the Golden Boot right now? And I was like, BWP? He's like, yeah, pretty sure it's not space, is it? And I was like, no. And he walks away. And the best piece of it is, which I know you can hear this in his voice, he walks away and he's like, shit, dope.
That's dope. You know, Bruce used to call Gargs Rocky. It was the best thing of all time. Hey, Rocky, what are you doing?
We got more Bruce stories than you can shake a stick at. I had my first kid, and he's like, "Would you name it?" And I was like, "Golden." It's my daughter, Golden. And he's like, "That's a stupid name."
No filter.
It's like it's one day before the MLS Cup final, and I have a kid. He's, oh my god, well, Benny, you nailed it. You went through all five and didn't answer one, but your interview was phenomenal. So
yeah, thanks, Ben. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, guys. I'm loving the podcast. I'm glad you guys are doing this. You guys are good voices, and I'm glad you guys are transitioning somewhat well. And have me back on soon, all right?
Thanks, man. Ben. Appreciate it. Take care. Right, have fun. Thanks, Ben, for being on. I thought that was a good podcast. If you guys want to check out his art, Ben Olson Art on Instagram, he's got some good pieces on there. It's pretty interesting.
Dude, what a stud. I mean, we talk a lot about, I think, icons in this sport, and I had referenced him as an icon in DC sports history, which is pretty incredible. I think you talked about it, Sal, 22 years as a player and coach. I would love to see the fact checking on anybody that has longevity like that. But he's also one of those characters that's been around MLS for so long. I mean, he could talk literally about anybody in throughout this league and the iterations of this league. That was pretty special just to hear him kind of riff on American coaches, especially, you know, being one, but also the topic there that hits on how many good American coaches there are right now. And it's an impressive list right now.
Yeah. I think you guys can see like his personality is pretty contagious, and you can see why, you know, the ownership group and tons of people in the DC area really kind of latched onto him and took a huge liking to him.
He's just always been that guy, man. He's one of the good ones, and he's just a good guy to have part of the MLS history. And I'm proud that I know Ben on a personal level. I know you are, Gargs, and Sal, mm-hmm. and that's it's just a big guy, you know, and he's got a big heart and always in the right spot.
All right. Thanks again for listening, everyone. Tune in next week. We got another good guest coming on. You guys will see later in the week, but thanks for listening.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with privacy mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing board or Miro board?
Drawing board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course. Present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now,
You're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's one.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.